Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Arr!
Today is February 2nd, 2014, and this is episode 45.
Oh my god, I know what it is.
I'm gonna fucking punch you.
It's the 20th anniversary of Hedgehog Day.
It is. This is episode 45. So, controversial.
Oh my gosh, that's so controversial.
I know, right? So this week we're going to take a look at a few sort of big controversial issues in gaming right now. You've probably noticed we haven't had any new content on the feed in a few weeks. We had a round two bout with scurvy, and we're only now sort of finally recovered. We can talk without sounding awful and coughing constantly. So we're just gonna really focus on some of the news that we missed during our little break, and we'll be back to you with one of our more normal discussions in a week or two. In the meantime, however, thank you so much, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to tuning in to us for another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast. And I guess let's start digging into our usual follow-ups and news bits. Slidekick?
Well, kind of tying into a controversy from last year, SimCity is finally getting an offline single-player mode in their next update. And I don't think that they say that there was an announcement of the date. They just said in the near future, right?
Yeah. As far as I'm aware, they've talked about how this is going to be update number 10, and as far as I know, no specific release date has been announced, just that this is something we should see in the immediate future.
I mean, the kind of shady thing about this is that, you know, people really easily figured out workarounds how to play offline, but then EA and Maxis were like, oh, we're exploring options, and people were like, it's not that hard. Change one line of code.
You know, again, that may be true. It may not be, though. You know, maybe they're trying some sort of hybrid where, you know, you can play offline, but it will still update your online city at intervals or what have you.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's... Since they're going out and doing something that they had previously adamantly said was impossible to do with the way the game was currently set up, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that this implementation will somehow be advantageous over sort of the hacked.
True. I mean, who knows how that would have panned out.
So I you know, again, I'm willing to go halfway and meet them halfway. If they're going to put this patch out there, I'm going to pick up SimCity again and I'm going to give it a go. And I'm going to choose to believe that they haven't been lying this entire time.
Yeah. I mean, if I see it on a Steam sale for a reasonable price, I'll probably pick it up now.
It won't be. It's, EA game, it'll be on Origin.
Oh no!
Wah, 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 wah.
So, we talked a while back about Marie Rose, who is going to be in Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate. She will be coming to consoles this spring. Woohoo! So, if you're a Gothic Lolita Magical Girl fan, was that what she was?
Something weird. I don't know.
She's definitely Gothy Loli. Definitely Gothy Loli.
Man, here's one I'm really very excited about. Last week, Capcom announced for release in Japan Monster Hunter 4G. You know, these G releases are typical in the Monster Hunter series for, like, later iterations on, like, one branch of the game. You know, Monster Hunter 3G we got as Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, which took like 2 years to cross over and come over to America, but we got it. Anyway, what's so exciting here is that Monster Hunter 4G was announced for Japanese release, and later that same day, Capcom announced Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate will be coming west. This will be, a localized version for the United States and for Europe. I'm sorry, North America and Europe, of Monster Hunter 4. So we're going to get Monster Hunter 4 And it's going to be the best version of the game available at the time. We're going to be getting this release in early 2015, which sounds like a long way off, but 4G is not coming out in Japan until the last quarter of 2014, so it sounds like we're only going to have a couple months wait between releases.
Oh, that's good then.
Yeah, so this is, man, I am just so excited for this. Anyway, in other news, we also have news here on Rocksmith 2014, releasing a trio of musical packs, of which I think, you know, maybe none of our listeners are into, but Slykick and I certainly are. We have here a pack from Aerosmith featuring Dream On, Legendary Child, Oh Yeah, Same Old Song and Dance, and Sweet Emotion.
That's pretty great.
They are individually available for $2.99 per track, or together for $11.99. There also has been a Weezer pack. Included in that release is Hashpipe, My Name is Jonas, Island in the Sun, Buddy Holly, and Undone the Sweater Song.
Not bad.
As with all Rocksmith DLC, apparently, these are $2.99 per song, and you can get the entire pack for $11.99.
There's also a System of a Down DLC, so kind of feeling a little bit like late 90s, early 2000s here. The System of a Down DLC will have BYOB, Toxicity, and Aerials.
You know, to me, that's interesting because it doesn't have Chop Suey.
Yeah, huh. But as per the others, each song will be $2.99, and because this is a bundle of three, it's $7.99 together.
Oh, interesting. Let's see. Something else somewhat interesting, you know, there was the Steam Dev Days event a few weeks ago. And while I have not seen much coming out of this event in terms of blog reports or what have you, some of the people who had attended this event were tweeting, you know, sort of live tweeting sort of what was being discussed at this event. And one of the statements that was made during the keynote, apparently, was, "Our goal is to make Greenlight go away, not because it's not useful, but because we're evolving."
Ooh.
So that's really interesting. You know, I've seen the Greenlight system come under a lot of fire. Certainly, you know, when it was first announced, it looked like sort of a great white hope. But in practice, it turns out that a lot of really great ideas just don't get backed because, you know, it's really hard when you're not a developer who has a big name already to really get your name out there, get people looking at your game and upvoting it.
So, you know,
some really cool-looking software was not getting approved. And this, I think, it seems to me like Valve sees how this is not useful, and hopefully they're going to start phasing it out, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Maybe just a Valve quality seal of approval.
Something, I don't know.
Only 5 games per year from non-Valve developers.
You say 5, and I'm like, dude, if Valve approved 5 games in a year, that would be an uptick for them.
That's true.
Why don't you take this next one? I know that's in your wheelhouse.
Pokemon Bank is being launched in certain Asian countries.
And this was about a week and a half ago.
Yeah, that's all that their Twitter said, Nintendo of America's Twitter. We do see it back on the Japanese eShop. Still no official word on North American release. Just please stay tuned to our social channels. That's basically, please look forward to it.
Yeah.
In Web 2.0 speak.
You know, I'm seeing a lot of people out there, on Twitter especially, getting really aggro about the lack of Pokemon Bank here in the U.S., but I have to assume that they're sort of doing almost like stress testing on the Japanese side of things and making sure that they're not going to have another colossal failure bringing down their whole system. So I would have to assume, you know, it's been like 2 weeks. I bet we'll get Pokemon Bank any day now.
Yeah. So Tomb Raider ended up being profitable by the end of the year and actually, you know, broke even and then made some profit. This is kind of notable because Square Enix had expressed disappointment at its initial sales numbers.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's again, this is to me really important because last year that was a much discussed, it was almost a controversial point in and of itself, that Tomb Raider, having sold 3.4 million copies in its first month, was a sales disappointment.
Right.
Of course, you know, that's somewhat difficult for me to hear because I thought Tomb Raider was an incredible game. So I personally was extremely happy to hear that as of December, you know, the game was profitable. Square Enix talks about it as, you know, a key franchise. So I'm very happy to hear that ultimately they're in the black, they're making money, and this great piece of software is, you know, it's going to have a better reputation internally. I'm happy for that.
Yeah, and of course, the Definitive Edition is now out in North America and Europe as of just a few days ago. So
yeah, and that actually had its own little mini controversy. Square Enix allowed GameStop to sell it like a week earlier than any other retailer.
See, I was wondering why I saw people with it until I heard of that. I was like, I thought that this wasn't out yet.
Yeah, no, they let GameStop start selling it nearly a full week in advance. So a lot of people are 100%ed with the game on Twitch and stuff before the game was even being sold in most stores.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty interesting. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, we have news here that Deception 4 Blood Ties now has a release date for North America and Europe. You may recall we've discussed this. It is the latest in the Deception series, released in the U.S. on the PlayStation 1 as Tecmo's Deception and Kagero Deception 2. There's also a PS2 game in the series called Trapped. In any event, Deception 4 Blood Ties will be releasing for the PlayStation 3 in North America on March 25th and in Europe on March 28th.
Neat.
On a related note, we have news in North America that Trapped is coming to the PlayStation Store as a PS2 classic.
That's neat.
Yeah.
And also related.
Indeed. Slackick, if you'd like to take these next two.
Yep, we've got a little news bits about Mobile Suit Gundam Extreme Versus.
Full boost.
And it will be getting some DLC Gundam. You can get Wing Gundam Zero and Shin Matsunaga Zaku for 400 yen each.
We also have news here that Super Smash Bros. Is going to have changes made to the edging mechanic. You may recall, ooh, girl, that look on your face. What were you going to say?
Nothing.
Nasty bitch. That when you hang on to edges, you know, this has been sort of a prime tactic in tournament play, utilizing sort of the invincibility frames of hanging on edges to sort of wait out your opponent. Mm. So they're changing now the period of invincibility that you'll have while hanging on an edge. And the grab controls will in fact be different now in order to sort of change the way that dynamic works, Masahiro Sakurai said. In addition, we also have confirmation that Lucario is coming back.
Yay!
Lucario, of course, is mine and probably your favorite ninja dog Pokemon. So I'm really looking forward to this. I thought Lucario was a great character in Brawl. So this is just good news to
My me. Favorite ninja dog Pokemon is Riolu. Thanks.
This bitch. Just for that, you can talk about our next news story.
Okay. You mean the fact that the Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII demo is out?
Yes. You probably already know that. In fact, I know many of our listeners have already played this. However, if you're interested in Final Fantasy XIII Lightning Returns and haven't played the demo, there is now one up on both the PlayStation Network Store as well as the Xbox Live Arcade.
Excellent.
Please look forward to it.
And in an interesting little tidbit, Nintendo is going to be helping Index publish Etrian Odyssey Untold Millennium Girl in Korea. And will be localized in Korean, which is actually interesting because not all Korean region games are localized.
Yeah, you know, that's something that's interesting about several of the Asian territories in gaming, is that a lot of times they will not receive localization for their individual territory, including even some really high-profile games like Oblivion, when it first came out in Japan, was not localized into Japanese at all.
Mm. And they noted on Silicon Era that Bravely Default will be an eShop release in Korea, but not localized. It'll be the English version.
Interesting, interesting.
But they did, and it looks like it's already been released, actually, LEGO Legends of Chima.
Oh, neat.
For those who might be in Korea and interested in Etrium Odyssey Untold Millennium Girl, that will be out on February 27th. Please look forward to it.
let's see. We also have word from Sony that we will be getting more software announcements after the PlayStation 4 launches in Japan on February 22nd.
I keep forgetting that the PS4 isn't out in Japan.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, because, you know, we've had it for, at that point, we've had it for more than a quarter.
And, I mean, I just realized that having just bought one yesterday at the store, hey, that I own one before anyone in Japan does. So, hashtag humble brag.
I am not here for your American-centric judgment.
My...
Check your privilege.
Yeah, my middle-class American privilege. Sorry. 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 Sorry about it.
You douche. We also have news that Disgaea 4 Return will be adding features from Disgaea D2 and Disgaea 3 for Vita. This is, of course, very exciting to me. Disgaea 4 Return is the upcoming Vita version of Disgaea 4, and it looks like they're going to be adding the PETA level spells that have guest artwork from famous mangaka, as well as the cheat shop from Disgaea D2. Those of you who are longtime listeners of Game Buoy, long time in this instance meaning 2 weeks ago, may recall that one of my favorite features in Disgaea D2 was in fact the cheat shop, where you could sort of change the parameters of the game to your liking. So this is very exciting to me, and I'm just going to lament for a moment, why the hell hasn't this game been announced for a U.S. release yet?
Yeah, these portable releases of Disgaea are usually pretty, pretty awesome. So we've got a new addition to the Killer Instinct roster. It's Spinal!
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so you want to serve up some skeleton realness. You know, in this announced trailer, I guess you could call it an announced trailer, it shows him, like, near a pirate ship. Is he a ghost pirate skeleton this time around?
I mean, I kind of think he always was.
Was he?
Yeah, I think so.
Is he on the SS Game Buoy?
I don't think so.
Do you have any Spinals in your closet?
That is what I call my sex toys, so yes.
Okay, a new Ouya console is available for $130. The Ouya 2, I mean, I guess it's not really called the Ouya 2, but it is a little bit upgraded. It has double the storage. It has boosted Wi-Fi connectivity. And the refined controller, so something Android yearly upgrades, but we knew this was coming.
Yeah. Something that I thought was interesting is that, you know, it's $130 rather than the $99 launch price for the device originally.
Well, yeah, I mean, but like, think of it like a Galaxy S3 and a Galaxy S4, I guess.
No, absolutely. And, you know, something that sort of sticks out for me is that for those people out there who really want to play Towerfall and don't want to wait for it to come out on Steam and PS4, this is currently your only option.
Yep.
So,
might as well spend about $30 more for the new Ouya if you're going to pick up a new Ouya.
Or just don't. Let's see, we have news here that JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle is going to have a new arcade mode for its Western release.
Cool.
Alongside this announcement also came news that the game is going to have a very limited print run of physical copies, and that it's going to be released exclusively via Amazon and ClubNamco.com.
Ooh, I bet you're going to get up on that, huh?
Most definitely. If you're looking forward to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle, and you want a physical copy, you basically need to get your reservation in now. At Amazon or Club Namco, because it doesn't sound like there's going to be a lot of these things floating around in retail channels.
Yeah, it looks great.
And last but not least on our follow-ups today, we have word that Mario Kart 8 is going to be coming to the Wii U in May.
Yay!
I'm obviously very excited. You may recall, we've previously discussed, I got to play Mario Kart 8 at the E3 Nintendo event at Best Buy. And I really enjoyed it. I'm really interested in seeing how far the game has come since then.
Yeah, even back then it looked like it was like really doing well.
Yeah, it controlled and looked visually like a finished game already. So I'm very interested in seeing it now.
Yeah, the fact that they spent a lot of time working on it, that's good news.
Yeah, by the time this comes out, that will have been like a year ago.
Yeah, really.
So, that's Nintendo's whole bag, is polish, polish, polish. There was some other Nintendo news in this past week, but we'll get to that when we talk about sort of our gaming controversies.
Oh, no!
In the meantime, it's time for...
News. 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 Oh, my God. News.
All right, Slagkick, you are our resident Blizzard fanboy, so why don't you take this first one?
You've been playing Blizzard games for longer than I have.
I have been, but how much money did you give them?
Okay, so Blizzard Arcade, which is, you know, a tool, I guess you could say, in StarCraft II, is now completely free for everybody. This lets you have access to custom StarCraft II maps, and things like Star Jeweled, and Left to Die, which are custom maps and modes that have been
custom games, you could even argue.
Yeah. So that's cool. I mean, we've heard about these.
Blizzard is basically giving the entire community tools to build their own games, and increasing the audience for people to consume these experiences like for free. They're just like, all right, guys, have at.
And you know, you could just get the starter edition and work with it. So.
Well, yeah, that's exactly so.
I mean, I know a lot of us picked up StarCraft on a Blizzard sale years ago just because it was
Actually never did.
Really? So, it was like $10. I'm like, I don't play StarCraft, but...
Looking back, I wish I had grabbed it. This is why you're a bigger Blizzard fanboy than me.
Well, you know, StarCraft Universe moving forward.
Yeah, I need to buy it.
So this is really cool to see, like, this possibility in the StarCraft community developing.
I'm not going to read the entire list, but it looks like Valve, how timely, has approved another 50 games via Steam Greenlight. Among the highlights in this go-around would be Cat Lateral Damage.
Yes!
This is a game I'm really looking forward to. You play a kitty cat who knocks objects off of surfaces.
Yes! I've been all about Cat Lateral Damage since I heard it announced.
Dude, right? There's also Rain World, which is a stealth platformer about a cat. So, that game actually was a Kickstarter game, and it's now available via Greenlight. It's going to be on Steam.
Nice! I want those both right meow.
Well done. We also have news from Japan via Capcom that the original three Ace Attorney Phoenix Wright games are going to be released as a trilogy on 3DS.
That's awesome.
To date, we have no news whether this title, Ace Attorney 1-2-3 Wright Selection, will be released in the West. When approached by Joystick, a Capcom representative told them that this title is not confirmed for release in the West at this time.
Boo.
Obviously, if you have a Wii, a PC, iOS device, you can actually download this same content already. This is available digitally on all those platforms, but I'm holding out for this 3DS release. I own these games already, and I'd buy them again. I love them. Slaggy McWaggy, why don't you take this next one?
Alright, so Earth Defense Force 2025 has officially gone gold. It will be out on February 18th, not too long from now. Publisher D3 has also announced... is their name D3 Publisher?
D3 Publisher, yes.
See, I thought that was just a typo on Joystick. D3 Publisher, who is the publisher, along with developer Namco Bandai, has also announced that there will be three supplemental DLC mission packs. So, if you were a fan of Earth Defense Force 2017 from Sandlot, then you're probably looking forward to this. So please look forward to it.
Yeah, you know, this is a long-running series of games that has a real devoted fan base. So I'm happy that these guys are still being served over on Xbox 360 and PS3.
In other Gundam news from... Not that we were just talking about Gundam news, but we were during the follow-ups. Mm-hmm. Gundam's Mobile Suit Gundam side story, Missing Link, which has nothing to do with Zelda or you are the biggest link, is going to be coming for PS3. The last time we've seen Mobile Suit Gundam side story was for the Saturn and Dreamcast.
Yeah, and you know, you may remember the Mobile Suit Gundam side story Dreamcast game actually came out in the U.S. That was sort of a big deal among otaku at the time because we didn't used to get a lot of anime games brought to the U.S. And that was sort of when that sort of started changing a little bit. So, just sort of an interesting factoid, I suppose.
Yeah. So this is a third-person shooter. So, if you're into Gundam and you like third-person shooters, please look forward to it.
Oh, this is surprising and awesome news. Resident Evil 4 is getting a new PC release. This time it's going to be called Resident Evil 4 Ultimate HD Edition. It's going to be up-resed, have a 60 frames a second lock.
Wow.
And be available starting February 28th via Steam for $19.99. And before you ask, this new version on the PC will include all of the sort of Steam platform support that you would expect, including achievements, cloud saves, trading cards, global leaderboards, native controller support, as well as all of the add-on scenarios that this game has received in various ports and what have you. You know, the separate ways, Ada Wong missions and all that.
Nice.
So yeah, this is gonna be good. I cannot wait.
Excellent. So, if you were excited that Virgil's costume was going to be in Sengoku Basara 4, then get ready to fangirl again, because Dante from Devil May Cry is also getting a costume in Sengoku Basara 4. This is our classic Dante, not new Dante from DMC.
Well, and that's what's most exciting to me about this. You know, it's a costume for sort of main character of the series, Date Masamune. And this is classic Dante. This is not sort of like DMC, like younger, arrogant, black-haired dude. Like, this is classic Dante, big-ass swords, trench coats.
If DMC in the long run would end up being like that Prince of Persia reboot that didn't go anywhere.
You know, a lot of people have been speculating to that point, even since before DMC came out, because, you know, Dante was added to Project Cross Zone, to Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and these were instances where they used classic Dante, even though new Dante was already a thing.
Yeah.
So, there has already
Devil May Cry side story. Right? Emo Dante.
And, you know, it's interesting that DMC was initially a sales disappointment, but my understanding is, much like Tomb Raider, that over time it has sort of, via Steam sales or what have you, increased its profile a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Yeah. In an interesting technical tidbit, 4Gamer was talking to Unity of Japan's director, Hiroki Omai, and he mentioned that Dragon Quest VIII is running on Unity for smartphones, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's very exciting. You know, Unity is becoming sort of like the go-to for a lot of indie development right now, it seems. So I think it's really interesting to see Square Enix working with one of their, like, big-budget, sort of, like, high-profile, and, I mean, you know, it's an iOS game, or mobile game. But for a mobile game, this is pretty darn high profile, so it's interesting to see them using Unity this way.
Yeah, definitely. So, some exciting news for Saga fans. There was a live...
Both of you.
A live concert by Kenji Ito, who has composed tracks for the Yamana and the Saga games. Akitoshi Kawazu, who is the creator of the Saga franchise, came to share a few words, and he said that he hopes to make an announcement of a new title within the next 2 years.
Excellent. That is very exciting to me. I really like the Saga series, and I appreciate that they're not super well known here in the U.S., and the games that have come out here, often people were like, why isn't this more like Final Fantasy? Especially since they were released as Final Fantasy games originally.
That's true. Wasn't the...
Final Fantasy Legend.
Yeah, for Game Boy.
For Game Boy, yeah.
Was a Saga game.
Yes. Just like Final Fantasy Adventure was Seiken Densetsu.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mana. So, it's funny that both Mana and Saga, which were referenced here because of Kenji Ito, you know, in the U.S., were known as Final Fantasy spinoffs. Well, neither of them are really super Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Or, you know, some people might just think that, where's the candy?
What does that even mean?
Oh, we'll talk about what that means in our discussion.
Herther, I got it. We also have news here that Marvel and Area Games' mobile division have teamed up to release X-Men Battle of the Atom for iPhone. And before you ask, this has nothing to do with Children of the Atom, Capcom's fighting game. This is a card battle game based loosely on the recent X-Men crossover series Battle of the Atom. I've been playing this game. It's kind of neat. Has a lot of really cool art straight from the comics. But the microtransactioning is pretty strong with this one.
Nice.
No, it's not. Like, I really want to buy a pack of premium cards, but it's like $30.
Not nice.
Yeah, it's not nice.
So Namco Bandai is going to be bringing Tenkai Knight's Brave Battle to 3DS.
That's interesting.
It is a Cartoon Network series.
And Toy Line!
And Toy Line. I guess it's Western, the show is a Western show.
I think so, and I think I saw toys for this at Target yesterday while I was looking for Power Rangers toys.
Oh, yeah, maybe we did. You know, they also had some Digimon. That was weird.
Yeah, that was very weird.
That was really awkward.
Let's see, coming out of full-on left field, we have word from Nintendo that they are going to be localizing Tomodachi Collection New Life for North American release. Satoru Iwata-san confirmed this to the Wall Street Journal, and while Iwata-san didn't provide a timetable for this release, they did confirm that the game was coming.
Of course, without the gay marriage bug.
Yeah, presumably. We've talked about this game quite a bit here. you know, this would be the Friend Collection series where basically your Miis hang out with one another and you do stuff like, hey, let's go out to dinner and play in a band.
That's still cute. I will get it, obviously.
Yeah, me too. Hopefully, if we can make gay marriage happen, hopefully, I don't know, some people out there maybe will be like, I want my Mii to marry your Mii, and I'll be like, I do.
Or you can just make a short-haired female Mii.
Right, that's what I'll do.
Or you can just pretend that your Mii is married to a track Mii.
Oh, right. Let's see, we have word here that Natsume is going to be bringing more Game Boy Color games to the 3DS Virtual Console.
That's very exciting.
A Natsume representative said that Harvest Moon Game Boy Color on Virtual Console did quite well for us, and we have a solid library of Game Boy Color games to draw from for re-release.
Woohoo!
They did not cite any titles specifically, but Silicon Era here, by means of the graphic they used, remind me that Natsume released a Lufia game for Game Boy Color. So I sure as shit hope we get that, because my love of Lufia is well documented.
Yeah. Something that is very exciting for Pac-Man fans and stands is that Pac-Man Museum is arriving on February 25th for PlayStation Network, with Xbox Live and Steam versions coming the day after. If you buy the game early, you can get free Ms. Pac-Man. Pac-Man Museum has some classic Pac-Man games like Pac-Man, Super Pac-Man, Pac-Land, Pac-Impale, Pac-Mania, Pac-Attack, Pac-Man Remix, and Pac-Man Battle Royale.
Now, Pac-Man Battle Royale is, for me, the real get here. This is a game that has never gotten a home port, And as a result, it's relatively rare outside of Japanese arcades. It's a multiplayer, like, 4 or 5 man, asynchronous wait, is that the word? Asymmetrical game design where one player controls Pac-Man and the other control ghosts hunting him and...
Yeah, I think when we were talking about Luigi's Ghost Mansion, you had mentioned this.
Yeah, there was a similar take on the Pac-Man formula via, I think it was called Pac-Man Versus back in the GameCube connectivity with Game Boy Advance days. But this is that idea taken to the next step. People who purchase this game on Steam will also get a copy of Pac-Man Championship Edition.
True. And I need to make a clarification. It's not that if you pre-order it, it's just if you buy it between its launch and March 31st, you will get that free Ms. Pac-Man.
Otherwise, Ms. Pac-Man will be available as DLC after March 31st with a $5 price tag.
Or, you know, you could probably go into anywhere that still has arcade machines and most likely find one.
Next up, we have news that Hulu, the TV streaming website, is going to be offering now a new Pokemon section that is going to have a bunch of the different Pokemon movies. It's going to have all 4 of the Pokemon Origins OVAs, the first season of the Diamond and Pearl storyline from the Pokemon animated series. And in the future, they're going to be adding more films, as well as more episodes of the series. So, for those of you who are interested in the Pokemon animated series, but for whatever reason missed the boat, it sounds like you're getting another chance.
You mean missed the boat, like, 15 years ago?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that is what I meant.
Miss the SS Anne?
Just take the next news story.
Mind Zero, which is being mentioned as a Persona-like dungeon crawler, is coming to the Vita this spring. It's kind of similar in concept to Persona. It stars a high school student forging a magical pact with a mind, which is a supernatural being that grants its partner special abilities and magic attacks. So it kind of does sound like a Persona clone. But, you know, looks pretty decent. It's, by Axis, so you know it's not like some... Axis is going to be publishing this, so you know I get the feeling that they wouldn't put out something super, super crap. It was developed by Acquire and Zero Div. So, if that means anything to you, you can pick it up for $39.99 when it launches digitally and at retail. And that's only for North America. Europe is only getting the digital download. Sorry.
Bum, 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 bum.
But yeah, if you're in the mood for some Persona realness, and you can't wait until Persona Q or Persona 5 to come out, then maybe pick this up.
And last, but certainly not least, Ghost Games, the developers of Need for Speed Rivals, has suffered layoffs in its UK office, and resultantly has stopped development on an presently unannounced Need for Speed project. This, of course, is terrible news, and we are deeply, deeply, deeply sorry for anyone negatively impacted by this development.
Yeah, they were given the option to either leave with compensation or help Visceral Games work on Codename Havana, which is rumored to be the next Battlefield title.
All right, well, with that all having been said, I think it's time for our discussion here. And we're just, you know, we're not going to be too structured here. We're not necessarily going to say anything new and thrilling, unfortunately. We just sort of need this week to sort of get back on our horse and get back on track for the SS Game Buoy. So, please bear with us as we discuss, first off, the shocking realization that EA and Microsoft have been buying off YouTubers.
What?
Slagkick, if you could give me a brief overview of this story.
So EA has a program called Ronku. I'm choosing to say it in the Japanese way. I don't know if I'm right. It's a program that offers YouTube personalities extra cash for covering certain aspects of EA games and gives rules about what you can show or say. You might have heard, similarly, there was some drama with Microsoft and Twitch. So, I mean, technically, it's not illegal or anything, but it's a little shady, you know? Just, is it, like, buying good press? Maybe.
You know, this for me is problematic and something that we really need to discuss here. First off, total disclosure, we here at GameBuoy have never been sponsored or received any kickbacks from anyone for anything. You know, just on the off chance. The thing here that the reason why this upsets me is to hear that Microsoft and EA are entering into contracts with Let's Players and video content producers on YouTube. For me, this really opens up a lot of questions about, like, trustworthiness of quote-unquote, like, fan voices that maybe you were going to for, like, individual opinions or, like, thoughts on content or product. This really shakes me sort of, I wouldn't say shakes me to my core, but it really does fill me with a lot of concern about really sort of how real the opinions that you're seeing on some of these Let's Plays and streams and what have you. Like, how genuine are the praise for some of these EA and Microsoft products?
Yeah. And, I mean, then there's just this whole issue of, you know, people having been complaining about revenue from Let's Play, or, like, you know, Nintendo doesn't allow them to do that. You know, so this whole, like, Let's Play streaming sort of deal business has really been kind of an ongoing controversy that's really, you know, with this recent announcement or announcements, kind of really making us think about it. The Battlefield 4 launch assignment had a potential payout of $200,000, which is just, I mean, crazy for me. That's like 5 years of my salary.
Yeah, right? Like, we're talking about obscene amounts of money ultimately being paid out here to buy off enthusiast press. Not even enthusiast press, like regular old Joes that are effing on YouTube talking about games. Like,
man, I should just upload some Battlefield 4 to be like, yeah, bro, you know, this is the best in the Battlefield series by far. EA has just knocked it out of the park. You know, I am always going to stand by my bros at EA because Battlefield is just gritty, it's real, and look at these graphics. Look at these explosions, dude. Can I have $100,000 now?
Ah, right? Like, I think about all of the IRL people I know who are playing Battlefield 4 who have had problems with Battlefield 4. And I was assuming that, like, some of the internet people that I follow who talk about how good Battlefield 4 is, and, like, at first I was like, oh, okay, so maybe the Battlefield 4 issues aren't affecting everyone, and some people are still having a great experience. But in hindsight, now I'm like, dude, like, are these people just getting paid to say that this game is working and good when it's actually broken
money?
Like shit? Well, effectively, right? Like, say our game is good, we'll give you $10. Lie to your followers for $10. And, like, people are doing it.
Or they're just like, oh, we're not going to mention the glitches, we're going to mention the good parts.
Right? So I found that find this very disquieting and very controversial, and I'm kind of upset. Like, this was a big deal the day it happened back on, like, January 22nd was sort of when this started to blow up. And for a day or two, people were talking about it a lot, and I feel like people have already let it go.
Yeah, I think that it's something that we're going to need to keep watching, just because with all of the different, like, streaming issues, like the Let's Plays, the naughty bits on the Playroom, and all of these sorts of issues with user-created content, I think it's really going to be a story we see develop in 2014.
I completely agree. I think this is going to be a big one.
Can I talk about one of the most WTF controversies going on right now?
You sure as hell can.
This Candy Crush Saga bullshit. So, I'm sure most of you have heard about this by now. Keen, who is the developer of the massively successful Match 3 free-to-play game, Candy Crush Saga, had filed an application with the Patent and Trademark Office in the United States for the word candy in video game and clothing products. I want candy. Oops, I owe money to candy now. So, that was weird enough. But then we heard that there was going to be potentially some issue with Banner Saga because it used the word saga. And this pissed a lot of people off because, you know, we talked about the Saga games earlier, you know. It's not like they own Saga. It's ridiculous that they have a trademark for candy. And, you know, they pulled a candy casino slots game or something off of the iOS store. And, you know, this guy was like, you know, I didn't even know about Candy Crush Saga when I was developing this. You know, I put it up. I hadn't had any problems until now. And so Keen is like, oh, we're not going to go after all trademark violations of candy, which kind of seems like backpedaling. But yeah. It also seems like a way for them to pick and choose what they think is violating, which is dangerous territory, I think.
I think it's very dangerous territory. And, you know, it's like I almost get sort of their starting point of their argument. There are some really blatant Candy Crush Saga ripoffs on the App Store. Don't get me wrong, I mean, Candy Crush Saga itself is already a ripoff, but whatever. You know, they do have an intellectual property there, and I understand why they would want to protect it.
I mean, if you were talking about something like Candy Crush Saga, two A's at the end, then, like, clearly that's a violation, but... like, candy casino slots or whatever, it's like, come on.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it just makes me also, in a larger sphere, wonder why the Office of Trademarks and Patents thought, that, oh yeah, we'll give the trademark for candy.
Yeah, I do think it's a little much what they ultimately got. Like, again, I get why they seek protections against some of these copycats. Just like I support Nintendo when they go after people who are ripping off Mario, and I go, I always support games rights owners.
No way, damn the man, Samari.
I always support them defending their intellectual property and stuff. But this is a little excessive, and you look at something like Banner Saga having issues, like, dude, that has nothing to do with Candy Crush Saga. Like, there is no one who could possibly look at Banner Saga and think, oh, this is connected to Candy Crush Saga. Like, no.
Okay, no. Maybe, like, some soccer moms.
I don't even think soccer moms would be that dumb. Like, they just don't even have a similar aesthetic or anything. Like, they're obviously completely different, even to layman, I think. So, I just think that that's really gross. I think it's a flare. I think it's an abuse of the intention of the system.
Yeah, I am not a fan of this. I think it's opening up a can of worms for some potentially nasty... I mean, we've seen similar issues with Zynga closing down apps and games on Facebook that involve Ville, which is a Farmville. So, it's a rocky road. Well, that was some rocky road now. Oh no, is Kenny going to trademark that because it's like a sweet treat?
I doubt it. Alright, I feel like we've kind of mined this for our opinions. So let's talk about this next one here. We have news that Vita Card Battler Monster Mon Piece is coming to North America. And, you know, this is cool. However, for those who aren't familiar with this game, you might be aware, there's a lot of sexualized imagery in this game of underage girls.
Well, but you also, not only that, but you have to power up your characters, your monster girls, by stroking the Vita screen and touching specific spots on each card. It's a mode called First Crush Rub.
Yeah, it's about as sleazy as you're imagining. And I want to tie this in a little bit to people out there who are raging on the internet about quote-unquote censorship in Bravely Default as well. You know, Bravely Default in Japan, all of the characters are under the age of 18. They're various teenage ages. And they wear somewhat revealing, you know, panties and garters costumes for some of the jobs.
Panties and stockings with garter belt?
Yes, exactly. And in the U.S., some of the texture work is being redone so that they're wearing, like, cool, high, tall boots and stuff so that they look less slutty. Quote-unquote slutty. I think sluttiness is perfectly fine. Like, own it. And the character ages are being changed so that they're all 18. And there are a lot of people decrying these extremely slight and, I think, appropriately tasteful changes as censorship. And now all of these nerd bros are all stuck on, well, I disagree with censorship of any kind. Preservation of art.
Yeah.
Like, bitch, y'all are arguing to see effectively little girl panties in your games. Like, I have never heard these kinds of people talking about, like, art censorship before. It's funny that everyone's got to be in their bonnet about it now that they're not going to get to look at and rub little girls' panties.
Ooh, controversy of its own kind.
Right? The thing here that bothers me, of course, is that, like, for example, Monster Mon Piece, and this also applies to Bravely Default, like, the storyline is not being altered. In Monster Mon Piece's instance, Idea Factory is going to just be removing several Monster Girl images due to the strong sexual nature of the card images.
Man, but the Tentacle Lolita was, like, the ultimate Monster Girl.
Right? Like, I'm sorry, to me this is more controversial that there are gamers that want this content. Like, yeah, they're removing this because in the US this is illegal. Like, you can't have even drawings of child pornography.
Something, something, otaku culture, something, something, slippery slope.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say. Like, they're removing some gross content so that they can sell their game and their game can be appreciated to the sensibilities of this nation. Like, I don't see how that's such a big deal. What about you? Do you feel differently? Do you?
I mean, the only thing is that it's kind of gross that it exists in the original form, but I can't really speak to Japanese culture and, you know, call people out for what that is. I mean, I don't approve of it. I do not approve of little girls' panties, but, you know, I also can't really comment on something that I am not aware of culturally, you know.
That's actually an extremely well-reasoned and way more balanced point of view than my own. I'm just like, you nasty.
You nasty.
Pretty much. Let's talk then about what the AV Club called the Turnerization of our classic games.
Yeah, that was a very interesting look, particularly at Final Fantasy VI.
For those of you playing the home game, which, since we're a podcast, I suppose is everyone, Final Fantasy VI was released on iOS. We talked about this a little bit at its announcement, I think. Basically that I would say, and there's probably a little bit of hyperbole in here, but this is a sacred cow to me. Basically, Square Enix just bastardized all of the art assets in the entire game and redrew them in these, like, really super filtered-looking, like, soft-shadowed, really ugly, just garish, super brightly colored sprite work that looks super, like, budget Korean sprite MMO game-looking.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I think, looks really gross. But there was this really incredible article on AV Club, basically comparing sort of these ports that Square Enix does in particular, because, you know, most of the Final Fantasy games have seen releases like this on iOS. We talked in particular about the particularly problematic Final Fantasy V port that had really, really ugly graphics. AV Club contrasts this to the Turnerization of movies in the late 80s when, you know, Ted Turner was using computers to colorize old movies in ways that frankly looked awful, although sometimes were not as bad as people remember.
True.
But basically, I mean, it's sort of interesting to think that, you know, we're sort of seeing, games hit this point that movies were sort of being treated at, you know, some 20 odd 30 years ago. And, you know, some of these side by side screenshot comparisons that they have on this AV Club article, just sort of really point out just how much artistic intent was lost in this sort of reversioning of this game.
Yeah. You did mention a little tidbit about how if you don't know how to change Virtual Console games to their native resolution, that's even, like, messed up. But, I mean, I think that's, like, a really minor point, and, you know.
Yeah, we've talked about that ourselves as well, I'm pretty sure. Making those older games display the correct size on your 3DS.
Right, right. I mean, but that's been something ever since GBA, right? Pressing one of the bumper buttons to stretch it out?
Yes, it has.
So I mean, I guess that's something I don't really think about. And not really at the root of the controversy here.
Which is taking these games and supposedly sprucing them up for a new audience, but losing sort of the artistic merit that the original work had in the first place. And you know, again, this, unlike some of these other controversies that we've talked about here today, this is really more of an opinion matter, because I see how someone could have, like, a fact-based opinion on the censorship issue we were just discussing. But this, you know, there might be people listening to our show right now who prefer these new sprites for Final Fantasy VI. And if you do, you know, more power to you. I'm certainly not going to judge you for that.
I mean, if they don't have the emotional attachment to the original.
Maybe.
Or just that aesthetic in general.
I mean, I don't think that these look good. Like, removed from nostalgia and sentiment, I still don't like this new art style. So but again, that might be opinion. I just really wanted to bring up, like, this really interesting alternate take on the matter that AV Club had. Like, I thought that mm-hmm. was really an interesting way to look at, sort of how many of us have been decrying this Final Fantasy VI re-release.
Yeah.
Slaggy McWaggy, how about you take this next one for me?
Well, there is some controversy surrounding the recent Dead Rising 3 patch, because it was a 13-gigabyte patch.
Yowza, 13 gigabytes!
That's a lot of data.
That's a shit ton of data, dog!
And, you know, we are used to maybe big patches for games being 500 megs or a gig. And, so, you know, this is really, really big. It was supposed to ensure compatibility with online play and upcoming add-on content. So, I mean, a lot of people are thinking, does it have actual DLC built into the patch? Is it just a really poorly
optimized
patch? But, I mean, one of the bigger issues is that some people in less populated parts of the country have slower internet, more restrictive bandwidth allowances for their, you know, data caps.
Well, and some of our listeners here, I know for fact, have data caps on their internet service. So having a 13 gig update go up that, and you know, because of the way the Xbox One, functions, it starts downloading these updates while it's asleep. So like, you might not even know that this patch has happened, and bam, you just lost more than half of your monthly allotment of download.
Yeah.
Like, that's a serious effing issue. So, and you know, I'm going to give the credit to Kotaku here, not something I necessarily do a lot, but they ran this article, 13 gig Dead Rising 3 patch raises questions about gaming's future. Like, and they're one of the only outlets that I really saw looking at, in particular, the bandwidth cap issue. Like, you know, a lot of people have caps that are larger than 20 gigs a month, but there are places in America and in other countries where that is the norm, where you have 20 gigs of bandwidth and, you know, Capcom, by what many people think is packaging their DLC as a mandatory update, so you're effectively downloading the DLC even if you don't buy it, is, you know, effectively causing for a lot of people very serious trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, my understanding has been that the DLC is packaged in this update, this mandatory update, so that all versions of the game are running the same software for the sake of troubleshooting and stuff. They only have one version of the software. There's not, like, a fragmented user base where some issues are from people who don't have the DLC or what have you. And I see on the back end how that would make things easier to deal with, but, like, that is not a viable thing to do to your consumers. Like, these customers, like, people who have data caps, like, that's a serious fucking problem.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I think, I don't know, a lot of people are just, in general, having issues with ISPs and, like, the whole idea of, can I limit access as an ISP and have certain sites load faster, blah, blah, blah. So, lots of controversy in that wider sense, too.
Yeah, oh, and, you know, you could even tie that in, the whole net neutrality stuff going on with this mandatory 13 gig data. You know, Dead Rising 3, to my understanding, has already broken the million sold mark. It is one of the more successful games on the Xbox One platform. And now, for a million people downloading 13 gigs through their internet service providers, like, at what point are internet service providers, because of the whole net neutrality decision, going to be like, wow, that's a lot of effing data from...
Why don't you pay up?
This service, Microsoft. Yeah. Exactly. Like, there's a lot of ways to see how this could be problematic. And, you know, we're reaching a little bit here for the sake of sort of looking at every possible angle for why this is problematic, but, you know, again, that's sort of what we do.
I mean, if EA and Microsoft are paying YouTubers, who's to say they wouldn't pay ISPs?
Yeah, who knows? This is dodgy and scary, and it all comes together in a way that I think is gross. So with that, let's move on to our last talking point for the day, one that I affectionately call Nintendoom.
Nintendoom and gloom?
Right, basically. So, as many of you probably heard...
Ooh, Wii U didn't hit a sales market target, and the Nintendo's on its way out, because the Wii U's a failure.
Yeah. So...
They should just not have the gamepad, and they're just going to make mobile games. That's what's going to happen. They should just turn into a third-party developer for PS4 and Xbox One.
So, the first real bad news hit back on January 17th. Following weaker-than-expected sales of the Wii U console and weaker-than-expected sales of the 3DS in Western markets, Nintendo drastically reduced their financial targets for the ongoing fiscal year.
Yeah.
And then about 2 weeks later, so this past week, Nintendo had their investor meeting, where several Nintendo executives took voluntary pay cuts, including Satoru Iwata-san taking a 50% reduction in his pay for the ongoing fiscal year. In this strategy briefing for investors in Osaka, Nintendo effectively said the following, that, you know, a price cut on the Wii U isn't an option. They are going to be releasing Mario Kart 8 in May, which, you know, we've talked about here on this episode already. Nintendo is going to continue focusing on the gamepad. It's not going to be removed from the Wii U. There is not going to be a gamepadless bundle. And in fact, Shigeru Miyamoto-san's team is currently working on a very gamepad-centric Wii U title for release in 2014.
Oh, good.
Nintendo also discussed their plans to license its characters to other companies for things such as Zelda Musou, as well as non-gaming companies for more, like, real-world products. So expect to see more statues and action figures and the like.
That's always great.
The Nintendo Network ID is going to expand to smartphones, but Nintendo games aren't going mobile in the strict sense.
It seems more like just a improvement of the mobile Miiverse.
Yeah, there will be mobile Miiverse, eShop access via mobile, and, you know, Iwata-san did say that they have a team working on the Nintendo app, and that it may have games made for mobile in it, but it will not be Nintendo games on mobile. That if the overarching Nintendo app has some cute, cool games, that may be a thing.
Like, Coin Collect!
Yeah, so we'll see. And, you know, I do think that kind of synergy is a great thing. You look at a lot of mobile games now come out and tie into, like, their console games, like the Mortal Kombat, DC Universe Injustice fighting game had a mobile app where you unlocked costumes in the console version by playing the mobile game. I could see that kind of synergy working out well. Give me a little finger-tracing game where I collect star bits in a Mario Galaxy-style setting that connects to, I don't know, like a Mario Galaxy HD that I can send my star bits over to the game or something.
Aw, right.
Like, I think that there are ways to leverage these sorts of ideas, and I think that's what Nintendo's looking at. Anyway, back to these last two bits. News bits, not star bits. We have news that Nintendo DS Virtual Console is coming to the Wii U.
Interesting.
So that's very interesting. And last but not least, Nintendo is working on a non-wearable health monitoring system as a part of their new quality of life platform expected to launch in 2015.
Huh. It's kind of an evolution of the whole Wii Fit.
Yeah, that's very much, to me, the direction they're going. You know, they were talking about their quality of life platform and non-wearables and not video games in the traditional sense. And to me, I'm thinking, like, is Nintendo going to start doing, like, exercise bikes and things that maybe you could sync with your Wii Fit dongle device pedometer thing?
I would probably buy into that. I mean, not in my current living situation, but if I owned a house, yeah.
Yeah, right? Even in my apartment, I would probably buy a Nintendo exercise bike. I don't give a fuck.
I'd buy a Nintendo exercise bike if you could, like, do Wii Fit Kart! You could, like, pedal through.
Ah! The thing is, to me, how cool would that be to, like...
Extra gaming?
Yeah, I really feel like if that's the direction Nintendo's going in, and I don't know that it is, but if it is, like, that's probably a really good strategy to sort of tap back into that market and get that Blue Ocean strategy going, where you're reaching out and buying to customers that maybe... or selling to customers that maybe aren't buying a Wii U, but, you know, they'd be down for the Nintendo Fit brand Xer bike or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, again, this is...
Track and Field HD.
Ah! And, you know, this is all certainly speculation. All we know is that the health and mental learning and whatever suite of quality of life platform products by Nintendo are coming in 2015. We don't know what that is, other than the fact that it exists and a thing that's coming, and that it's going to be a new third pillar of their business in addition to their handheld games and their console games, both of which they say are pillars that are going to continue moving forward.
Hmm. Interesting.
but, you know, on this Nintendo-doomed tip, things that people are still talking about in addition, we have news that Namco has canceled Pac-Man Museum on 3DS and Wii U. We were just talking about Pac-Man Museum a little bit ago. It's still coming to Steam, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360, but not to 3DS and Wii U. Certainly for me, this is unpleasant, because 3DS is the most likely platform I would have bought that on.
Yeah.
But, you know, it will still be coming out on other platforms, and, you know, hopefully I'll probably still pick it up, because I would really, really like to play Pac-Man Battle Royale.
Indeed.
Also said during the lead-up to these financial results at their investor strategy meeting, Nintendo acknowledged that they misread the market when putting together their business structure for the 3DS and Wii U over the last fiscal year. You know, there's not a lot to say about this. It's pretty cut and dry. Nintendo thought these platforms were going to sell as presented.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about how much we love the Wii U, how we think that there's a lot of gems that people just aren't opening their eyes to, like Wonderful 101, and I mean, you know, any of the first party stuff, for sure. But, you know, the market's gonna speak, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. They misread the market, they acknowledge it, they're moving forward, and, you know, they're still in it. This has been a really insane week. Following the announcement of Nintendo's scaling back their forecasts, a lot of people were speculating that this meeting, this investors meeting, was going to be the meeting where Nintendo revealed that they were going third party, they weren't going to do hardware anymore, or they had new hardware that they were going to be releasing, like, this year because the Wii U is dead officially right now, or like, oh, we're not doing platforms changing at all, but we're just going to start doing mobile development.
Because that worked really well with Sega.
Yeah, it has never gone well for anyone, spoiler alert. And it will never go well for anyone. Nintendo has always said that if it ever got to that point, they would retain their IPs, do stock buybacks for all of their shareholders, and just close down the company, and that these franchises would just die forever. And I believe that that's a thing that is likely to happen if they ever get out of gaming. Which is why I've always said that if Nintendo ever gets out of gaming, I'ma get out of gaming.
Yeah. Bye-bye, Game Boy.
Like, I don't foresee Nintendo doing, like, a shitty Sonic, like, oh, we no longer have control of our hardware, so we're just going to have to release this super buggy piece of shit Sonic Next Level game. No, Nintendo's not going to do that. I see Nintendo becoming a fitness supply manufacturer before I see them going third party. So if you like Nintendo games, either start going Nintendo console, or don't be surprised if someday that becomes not an option and we lose this treasure trove of intellectual property in the gaming sphere.
Yeah. Bummer.
Yeah. Wow, that felt like a real downer. What else do you have to say about Nintendo while we're talking about it?
I think that people have been overreacting a lot. I think that the Wii U is not as doomed as it will be. I do think that they're already probably having some very stern and serious discussions about what the next Nintendo console is going to look like.
You know, but again, as we discussed last week, Microsoft and Sony are probably having those same discussions. You never rest on your laurels in this business. As soon as you ship, you're already looking at what you're going to be shipping 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think this is the end for Nintendo.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe in the long term, maybe Nintendo's doomed. I don't know. I don't think so. But if that is a thing that's going to come to pass, it's not going to be in 2014. That's a whole nother console generation down the line. Like, the Wii U is not the end of Nintendo. The 3DS is not the end of Nintendo. Maybe the 4DS. Maybe the Wii U. The Wii 3.
The Wii U 2.
Right? If these things, if those
with
things also
consideration
flop crazy
from
hard. Right. If those things also flop crazy hard, maybe then we're going to start looking at Nintendo
away. I do see
but I doubt
Wii U being the end of the Wii brand.
I do see that as well. I wouldn't be surprised to see them go for the next one to, I don't know, Super Nintendo 2. The Ultra Nintendo. Mega Nintendo.
Ultra 64.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously.
Dolphin. Star Cube.
These are already things, though. Like, you're using just names of consoles that were in development and not used.
No, I know. That's what you did when you said Ultra.
Yeah, but no, not Ultra 64. Like, Ultra Nintendo.
Nintendo Entertainment System.
Right? I bet that would be great. I would totally buy a new console called Nintendo Entertainment System.
Our NES Entertainment System.
Oh, not that, though. That's
Nintendo Entertainment System Entertainment System.
Ew, no! All right. We have clearly mined this topic for all we have to say. I think it's time to get a little sassy.
Rumor has it.
First up, we have news that Silicon Era has found trademarks in the U.S. for the Seeds of Salvation. You may recall a couple of months ago, Silicon Era had found these trademarks, Seeds of Salvation and Luminaries of the Legendary Line, filed in Japan by Square Enix, and everyone was sort of speculating at the time that this was a new Dragon Quest game. Because these certainly sound like Dragon Quest subtitles, with the alliteration and what have you. So, basically here in the U.S. now, Seeds of Salvation has also been trademarked. Which, you know, certainly typically is an indication that the publisher will be planning on using this title for a Western-released game. The hope being that this will be a Western-released Dragon Quest game.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I sure as heck hope that this remains true. Slag, I think you had a rumor for us, too?
Yeah, there was a toy fair in Nuremberg. I guess that's a big thing in toys.
Yeah, these sorts of trade shows are definitely a thing.
Well, and the notable rumor here is that there was a little placard that was hinting at a Sonic game for PS4, Xbox One, and Wii U for 2015. This is... we're not sure if this is the same game that would be the third in the Nintendo partnership that's now just not...
exclusive.
Exclusive, which would be interesting to see a Nintendo-published game on other consoles.
Yeah, that seems unlikely to me. What seems more likely to me, if this game were that game, the previously exclusive one, it would be a result of Sonic Lost World's low sales... and Sega getting cold feet about the Nintendo publishing deal, and maybe they would seek to get out of that.
Right. So we'll see what Sonic 2015
one thing
shapes
that,
out to be.
That does need to be said is that this placard was at the booth of Jazzwares, and if you've been to Toys R Us recently, you may notice that Jazzwares has been doing Sonic action figures for years.
Yeah, they have.
So this, to me, again, it's a rumor because it's not an official announcement made by Sega. This seems extremely likely. This placard at Jazzwares booth saying, figures from the new 2015 title to be announced Sonic game, to me, that definitely seems like a reliable source. I would say, without question, this is probably a game that's really going to exist.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that having been said, smash or trash! Real quick, we've got three articles for you here today. We have two smashes and one trash. First up, we have an article here by Jeremy Parrish over on US Gamer. It is Virtual Spotlight, Castlevania II, Simon's Quest. This is a retrospective on Castlevania II, Simon's Quest, which recently went up on the Virtual Console for 3DS and Wii U. And I just thought it was a really well-written look back at the game design and sort of the retail climate of, you know, NES games at the time of its original release for Castlevania II Simon's Quest. I just thought this was a really cool little read, and I wanted to point it out to you guys so that you could check it out.
Yeah.
Slaggy, this second article is one that I thought you would like to talk about.
Yeah, this is from Chris Kohler over at Wired. Called Everything You're Thinking About Nintendo is Totally Wrong. It's basically just a reaction to, like we said, everybody kind of having this knee-jerk reaction to the Nintendo money woes and saying that, you know, no, Nintendo should not be doing mobile games and basically needs to... that Nintendo, what they really need to do is get more customers and get their old ones back instead of, like, saying, oh, that Nintendo's customers are playing mobile games, let's make mobile games. It's like, instead of that approach, figure out why they left, get them back, and get more customers back.
Yeah. I just really wanted to point this article out because, again, it's a well-reasoned, well-researched take on why sort of the layman's opinion and analysis of Nintendo's financial situation is just wrong. Like, it is factually wrong. And, you know, to me, it's just a very very interesting read. So I would highly recommend that you check these articles out. You can find links over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And last, but certainly not least, we have an extremely, how does one say, incendiary article over on Polygon called EA Continues Race to the Bottom with Unexplained SimCity Offline Reversal.
Oh.
I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to talk too much about this article. I just want to say that Kotaku-like clickbait title really irritates me, and this article is basically just, EA is full of liars. I can't believe that they never explained why we don't already have offline mode. They said it was impossible. They shouldn't be offering it now. Like,
well, you know, I was really disappointed in this particular person and how clickbait their previous site had gotten, which is no longer existent.
Yeah, you're basically naming names there, but I didn't want to call anyone out for sort of their bad work. But I really feel like this does a discredit to games journalism. The whiny tone of this article, I don't think it's very informational. It's not educational. It's just a guy whining because the SimCity Online situation didn't work out the way he wanted it to work out. And I just,
yep.
Really think it's a poorly written piece. And this is, again, you know, we talk about these smashes and trashes because we want to highlight what games journalism can do and what it shouldn't do. And this, to me, is just a good example of, like, please don't write like this. If you're trying to write about games, like, don't take this them versus us tactic. Like, just try to explore the facts if you can. Like, I don't know. I'm all about opinions, and I appreciate it, but, like, something about this piece and, like, how anti-EA it is to the point of, like, obscuring the facts, it just really rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
In any event, you know what's up?
I said, hey, what's going on?
I said, what you been playing?
Oh, man, Borderlands 2.
Really?
No, I'm quite lying. I have been playing two games. One, because of an article I read on Kotaku a couple of weeks ago, I decided to give a second look at Final Fantasy Tactics A2. And then the other game, and this is probably pretty predictable to, you know, when you consider what we were talking about a little bit ago, the Monster Hunter 4G news sort of got me in a real Monster Hunter mind frame. So I've been going back to Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Let's see, of the two games, I'm really surprised by Final Fantasy Tactics A2. When I first played this game, like, I liked it, but I got tired of it, like, 7 hours in, which, for a tactics game, is unusual, you know. I dig into, like, these Disgaea games, or original Final Fantasy Tactics, or even Tactics Ogre, and I put, like, hundreds of hours into these games, so burning out in A2 after, like, 7 hours was weird. And I'm revisiting it now. I'm already past the point I was when I first played it, and I don't get it. Like, I'm, like, 12 hours in now, and I'm like, dude, this game is great. How the shit did I not get into this before?
Maybe you were being snobby.
I might have been, because they did make some changes that at the time I didn't like about, like, oh, only certain races can be certain classes, and it all just seemed like really arbitrary change to, like, a job system that already worked super well. But again, you know, now that I'm over it, I guess, like, I'm really enjoying it. I think it's a great game, very well balanced. It's probably one of the best balanced Final Fantasy Tactics style games.
I mean, because Tactics kind of had some brokenness, right?
Oh, tons of brokenness. Like, anyone out there who's listening, like, calculator class, right? Like, or I guess now they call them arithmeticians. But whatever.
Math mage.
Basically, right? Well, that's sort of their whole shtick. So, like, there's nothing super overpowered like that, and I was looking online, and apparently that remains true through the end of the game. Like, even the prestige, like, guest characters are still pretty well balanced now. And Monster Hunter remains Monster Hunter. You know, it's a hell of a good time. The big difficulty curve. But again, it's skill-based. So once you get the hang of it, like, it's not about grinding out items, although that is one of the focuses of the game. But you, on day one, if you have the skill, you can excel at the game immediately. All of the gear, like, there's no, like, skills or whatever. Like, all of the gear is just so that you can hunt bigger monsters with more HP. Like, otherwise, you do the damn thing, or you play something else. It's unforgiving, but if you can do it, it is an awesome experience. Slaggy, what about you? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of the Netflix app on PS3.
Oh, tell me about that.
You know, unfortunately, with my bout of scurvy, my gaming time took a bit of a hit in the past few weeks. But, you know, I do have a lot to look forward to. I mentioned earlier in this episode that I found a PS4.
And that's so very exciting.
I'm really excited to report on that, you know, on my experiences with things like HD Flower and, well, I mean, I guess Flower already was HD, but super pretty HD Flower. And, you know, a lot of these...
Definitive Edition.
The Flower Definitive Edition, yeah. One thing that was really fun for me, which kind of made me feel the gaming love again, was playing Rock Band with you last night.
Oh, yeah, we did. We played Rock Band for probably 2 or 3 hours yesterday.
And, I mean, it really, you know, made me kind of miss that whole, you know, we talked in the rhythm gaming episode that we did with Rob Roberts about, you know, how... It really was kind of the end of an era, and, you know, it's nice to see that it still holds up, and, you know, that it's still a good fun time, and he still has a huge library that, you know, of downloadable content.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was a fun little experience, definitely. All right, well, with that having been said, I feel like that's that. Social links, do we got any?
We have a few. You know, it's been kind of quiet on the social media front. You know, scurvy, be damned. We did get not a follow-up, but we got an answer to the question of the week from our last episode, which was our 2013 year in review. AxeDeft over on Twitter shared that Animal Crossing New Leaf is my game of 2013. It's a game I still play to this date and still have fun with it. That's awesome. I wish that I, you know, was able to stick with Animal Crossing. Because it's always so sad to think of, like, all your favorites moving away. So that's really cool. I really admire that you're sticking with it, AxeDeft. So I hope you're having lots of fun and that your house and your town is as you wish it to be. Kind of notable news that was mentioned in the form of a tweet that we were mentioned in is... I'll just read the tweet from Koopa Club. It says, "Hey, the panel that Germs and Phil were on with OLR... GameBuoy.org and Game Bars on YouTube. This is, of course, podcast Cross Zone, our panel from GamerX, which has been, I was very surprised to see released as one of the GamerX talks, you know, which we before have seen, such as the EA panels, the ones with Anna Anthropy have been released as Gamer X talks, and so I kind of figure, like, oh, you know, some of these really high-profile ones, like the voice acting one with Ellen McClain and John Patrick Lowery, and the Gamer Bear proposal, of course, was released as a Gamer X talk, and I guess the podcast Crosszone, you know, was deemed worthy of release, so that's very, very touching.
Yep, and we will, of course, include a link to that over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. The last thing I have to share is just a sassy little thread with our podcast sister shows. Fix Your Face, better known as Jeremy from Koopa Clubs, had tweeted a few weeks ago that I'm now finally caught up on OLR, VG Realness, and Nintendo Fun Club, catching up with GameBuoy.org and Game Bar next. VG Realness said, "Hey, yes, girl." Game Bar retweeted it. And then I said, "Yes, girl." I said, "Girl, yes." Hashtag sister shows. And to that, Game Bar replied, "Yes." Hashtag Hunty Bunch. User JLaw on Twitter, who is from VG Realness, said, "Love Hunty Bunch." So lots of love to our Hunty Bunch. With
the Hunty Bunch.
Right?
That's the way we became the Hunty Bunch.
We'll be shouting out to all y'all in a few minutes. And not to steal your thunder, because you might have mentioned this during your shout-out anyway, but Koopa Club, last but certainly not least, had a tweet saying, our Mega Man X episode with VG Realness and GameBooey.org is live, and it's great. Hashtag humble.
Woo, woo!
Yeah, that's, no, of course, was... It was you, and was it Delvin from...
It was Delvin, yes.
That's what I thought. You know, I unfortunately haven't had a chance to check this out because, like, the past week, I've been, like, sleeping all the time.
Bitch, you can be sick and listen to a podcast.
But I'm looking forward to this because I know that Captain Spike always represents us well on
that's
other podcasts.
That's some bullshit. I'm awful.
Rude to yourself. And, of course, Mega Man X... is amazing. I haven't actually played X2, so I'm excited.
It's on Virtual Console for Wii U.
Yeah, you should grab it and play it. I should do that today and talk about it next time.
Have you played X1? I know that you played Maverick Hunter X on PSP. Have you played...
I did go and download X for Wii U, so...
Oh, excellent. Cool. Yeah, I love having those games on the gamepad. I love curling up in bed and playing through Mega Man X and Mega Man X2, and also Mega Man 1, 2, 3, and 4. So damn it, Capcom, let's get Mega Man 5, 6, and X3 up on Virtual Console now, okay? Love you, mean it. Oh, it occurs to me now, with DS games coming to Virtual Console on Wii U, you guys can put the ZX and ZX Advent games on Virtual Console, too. Those games are awesome. They're basically Mega Man Metroidvanias. Metroidvanias.
All right, with that... thank you so much for tuning in. We, as always, love your feedback.
Love your feedback.
We are grateful for your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews.
Thank you. Grateful.
We like your Facebook likes.
We like
likes. We fucking love Twitter.
We fucking love Twitter. You can tweet me at @SpikePoint.
You can tweet me at @SlagKick.
And, of course, you can tweet the show at GameBooey.org, and the .org is spelled out DOTORG.
At GameBooey.org.
Brilliant.
You can tumble with us on Tumblr. You can plus one us on Google. You can send an email to mailbooey@gamebooey.org.
Mailbooey@gamebooey.org.
At any time, not just for saying hello, but if you have an old question of the week that you need to give more space, or even a current question of the week if you need more space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Answer than 140 characters.
Anything at all you want to talk about with us, whether it's question of the week related or not, please reach out to us.
Mailbooey's just sitting there waiting for some mail.
Waiting for some mail. I'm really
hungry. You know, he maybe gets one email every 2 months, but he still loves his job.
I hope so. Wouldn't it be awful to find out that our imaginary friend email robot hates us? That seems really sad.
See, I always envision him as a little, like, game cart.
I always imagine him as, like, a little robot. Like a Game Boy with, like, punk eyes or something.
Oh, huh. Maybe he was, like, Game Boy from the,
yeah, I think that's Captain where N. My mental image started, was the Captain N Game Boy.
I guess all of our various Booey NPCs, mascots. I guess we kind of have mascots, don't we? Male Booey's our mascot. Why don't you do our shout-outs? Oh, of course, our home base is GameBooey.org.
GameBooey.org.
You know, you can always find all our episodes there. Usually all the show notes are there. I was a little behind with the last episode due to my scurvy, which is not an excuse, but, you know.
Man, you talk about it like you had chlamydia.
Alrighty, so why don't we shout-out to the pad-out?
What does that even mean?
I don't know. It's like a laters on the menje.
Oh, man. All right. Well, as ever and always, my first shout-out goes over to Koopa Club. They're great. I love what they do. If you dig our show, it's very likely you're going to dig theirs. Also, of course, is VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. Video Game Realness and Koopa Club, they're kind of like my sister shows. I really love these guys. I think what they all do is super good, and you're really missing out if you're not listening to them all. I also want to shout out to Geek Charisma, a podcast that is everything geek with discussions on movies, DVDs, video games, conventions, and comics, as well as Neshoba talks with you about games.
Yeah, he's starting to put some more content up, which is awesome.
Yes, I'm very excited. You know, that's sort of like I almost said Orange Lounge Radio, like an NPR take on sort of like the gaming sphere with like singing and life stories. And it's just, it's a really cool show. No one else is doing what Neshoba does over there. But now I get to actually shout out to Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I take so many of my cues. Rob Roberts is my sister from another mister, and I
part
always...
Part of your hunty bunch.
Part of the hunty bunch, yeah. I literally wouldn't do a show if not for Rob Roberts, so as ever and always, a real credit to you.
Well, you know who else we wouldn't do a show without?
Exactly so. On that same ticket, I want to shout out to the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore, featuring John Wicked, whom you might know from the Geeks for Fans podcast that got us started in the first place.
May they rest in peace.
May they rest in peace. And last, but most certainly not least, I advise you check out the Retrograde podcast. They look at some retro games, focusing on a different one every week, and there's always something interesting to be said about these old classic games. I love listening
to these
shows. And
you know, shows. I bet they're a retro show that doesn't complain about Kickstarter funds.
Probably. Well, about how much they need Kickstarter funds. Right? I don't mind when people complain about Kickstarter funds, just not when they're asking for them.
So, why don't you transition us?
I want to take you to a game bar!
Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They are the gay video game prairie home companion. Nerdgasm Network featuring Wicked John, the wildest shock jock video game radio show you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, you can hear Horde House, the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. And Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Video Game Outsiders is the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. And last but certainly not least is the Nerd podcast. That's Nerd with a G, which is pop culture ramblings, rants, and reviews from a gay nerd perspective. With that, thank you as ever and always. Oh, and of course, pouring out a 40 for the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated, who you hear every time you hear the Game Boy theme music.
And with that, thank you, our lovely listeners, for spending this evening with us, or day, or not, you know, depending, morning, depending on where or when you're listening to this. We really appreciate your support. We'll be back here with you in a week or two to talk about something. In the meantime, keep gaming, keep thinking, and Hakana Sugita Otoko. You're not going to say anything? Check, 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 check.
Ow.
Are you just about ready?
Ackham. Ackham.
Okay, see what Jason reporting for duty.
You're such a shady fucking bitch. Shady fucking bitch.
I did not have chlamydia.
Good, I'm happy that
I'm glad that yours cleared up, though.
This bitch... My chlamydia did not clear up.
Oh, that's a shame.
No, I'm joking. I don't have chlamydia. Anyone out there that does, get meds, get it taken care of. Like, chlamydia's not cute.
Yeah, same with herpes.
I'm, like, chlamydia-phobic, I guess.
Please put out that cough.
Obviously.